Talk. This is Mark Steiner. Good to have you with us here on the Mark Steiner Show on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. We know this is election day. People are lining up all over the state and all over the cities. It's going to be a momentous election in many ways. We have a great panel lined up here to talk about what's happening in the polls, especially with our city council races in the city we're going to be focusing a bit on here. But before we do that, we have just a couple of minutes here because my dear friend Willie Flowers is on the phone, who is, of course, one of the leading actors from Park Heights and all this incredible work. And Willie, good to have you with us for a minute here.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm very well, man. Very well. How are you?
Great.
So, Willie, tell us about this quilt. What's coming to town and the two women that are being honored here, which is pretty amazing.
Yes, on the first piece of it, as a young brother, his name is William Rhodes. He's one of the first graduates of the Baltimore School of the Arts, and he did a quilting project that created a collaboration between South Africa and San Francisco. And he was in town, and he showed me his work, and I was just blown away by and it did a commemoration to Nelson Mandela, and which is a very profound thing for anybody over the last 40 years. And in doing it, I wanted to share with the community, but at the same time, we have heroes and sheroes in this city that don't get the high recognition, but, these individuals, speaking of Mother Henrietta Lacks and Mother Marion Martin Banfield, who I think just need recognition, and we try to do that in what we do. And so our idea is to do a quilting project that collaborates with young people in the Baltimore City of the Park Heights community that shows a commemoration and honor for these two great women.
And I love that. I know you're doing what time is the ceremony tomorrow?
It's a ceremony that's tomorrow at 12:00 noon. At the FIA Center at 4151 Park Heights Avenue. That's our headquarters. And it's at the corner of Park Heights and Quantico. So everybody's welcome to come out. It's just a kickoff and acknowledgement, and you'll get an opportunity to meet William Rhodes.
And just say that when you get there, we're going to be doing another longer story with Willie and everybody about Marion Banfield and Henrietta Lacks, of course, all of you, most people know as the woman who's DNA was stolen, and the whole international story of that, and we've interviewed her family here on the program before. And Marion Banfield not only is the grandmother of Jada Pinkett, but was an incredible leader in this community in the 50s and 60s and 70s, and a forerunner in the black community, fighting for human rights and civil rights, a founder of the Baltimore Ethical Society and more. And you couldn't have chosen two better women to honor. And different poles of our society. So, Willie, appreciate the call, man, and we'll be back in touch and do a whole much longer piece.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. In the studio, Catalina Byrd, media consultant, political strategist, on and off host here on WEAA, presence on most of our shows. David Troy, co-founder of 410 Labs, co-founder of the Baltimore Election 2016 Facebook group, and Luke Broadwater, reporter for the Baltimore Sun, where he covers city hall and local politics. Good to have you on studio.
Good morning. You. Happy Election Day.
Happy Election Day.
Happy.
Oh, you sound really happy.
Happy when it's over.
410, all of us. 410-319-8888 is the number to call. You can also email us to talk@steinershow.org, tweet us at Mark Steiner. Let us know how you feel about this election today, where it's going. We're going to talk a bit about the council races, which haven't been covered a lot. Enough, I think, in many ways. So we're going to focus a bit on that. But 410-319-8888, your thoughts. And you can talk about who you're voting for and why and what you see out there. We'd like to hear your thoughts. The council races here, there are two different, many different points of view of this, but I mean, there are six open seats. So there'll be six new people no matter what. Mm-hmm. And there are going to be three seats. There are three seats that are seriously challenged. Mm-hmm. Right? So we can see it in a really...
Yeah, I mean, I think four seats have good, serious challenges.
Really, four? Yeah. So give me the fourth, because I know. Go ahead, go through them.
Okay, so I think in East Baltimore, Shannon Sneed is mounting a really strong challenge to Warren Branch. Obviously, she lost by 43 votes five years ago, and so that shows that. And she's raised more money this year. She's a lot more endorsements this year. She seems to be very strong. In West Baltimore, I think John Bullock is mounting a strong challenge to Pete Welch. In South Baltimore, I think Eric Costello, even though he's the incumbent, even though he has a lot of money.
You mean Midtown Baltimore?
Yeah.
So he's Bolton Hill, really, right?
Well, no, it's that whole district.
Oh, goes yeah, down
yeah,
to South
Baltimore. Right. It starts up there and it goes all the way down to South Baltimore.
The up-and-coming white district, right?
Exactly.
Yes.
I think he had... He has three pretty good challengers, and I would not be surprised there. There's he's got to be the favorite, but I think that I would not be surprised if there that isn't a close
I don't even know
race
if you
as
call
well.
Him the favorite because he wasn't elected, and there's some people who are going to vote against him just because they feel like
and he was appointed by Jack Young.
Appointed,
who,
right.
People have issues with
when,
that.
When what's his name? Bill Cole. Went to BDC, so I don't know.
Right, but that's a factor, I think. What was the fourth race you were going to say, Luke?
Okay, so wait, which was I do? Come back to me.
You already said what could happen in 13 and as well as 11, mm-hmm. and you covered 9, and you said there was a fourth one.
Bill Henry.
Yes, Bill Henry in North Baltimore. Right. Yeah. Brian Hammack has outraced him 4-5-1. So, yeah, those are the four incumbents that I think have serious challenges to them. And I think Dia Thomas is probably the person best positioned to challenge Costello. She has the second most money. And if there is an anti-Costello sentiment out there, perhaps they go to her.
What are you going to say, Catalina?
I would agree with that. I mean, and she has a pretty good group of infrastructure, some volunteers. I've seen Dia out and about. She's doing really well. I'm disappointed in the support for Brian Hammack. I mean, of all the council people, of all the incumbents, I think Bill Henry is probably like the least bad yeah. for constituency
he's
service.
The least one that needs to
he's
go.
He's like the least one that needs to go. And in this era where we're about to have a whole new council and a whole new mayor, and I keep saying that the sky is falling because I just don't know that I don't want a whole administration of novices all at the same time. I think that Bill would be great in, as a source of institutional wisdom, you know.
Absolutely.
To be in the council as all of these people come in who really don't know how that process works.
Well, and it would have been great to see somebody like Brian come in and run for like comptroller or city council president where we really needed more competitive races and more money and attention. And, you know, that just wasn't in the cards. The notion that he would run against Bill, it seems kind of unnecessary, but, you know.
So...
Well, you have to look at his just to stay on this race for a minute. You have
sure,
to look
sure,
at
sure.
his network and who's supporting him.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's got a lot of money from Joan Carter Conway, from Martin O'Malley, from his PAC. Clearly, Bill Henry offended Joan Carter Conway two years ago when he ran against her. And so they have really aligned the forces to try to take him out. Yeah. And their vessel is Brian Hammack. You know, is Brian Hammack a good candidate in his own right? Many people seem to like what he has to say, and he's been active. But I also think Bill Henry has a number of advantages. He's been the incumbent. A lot of people see him as a quality councilman in terms of being thoughtful. We have,
right.
He actually thinks things through and discusses them in a real intellectual way, and that is not a bad thing to have on the city council.
And he shows up to stuff. In
yeah, he shows up.
Exactly.
He shows up. You know, and how long we sit on the air or, you know, you're calling people for quotes, where in between election years, it's all whoever they liked didn't win, right? And it's always, but I've never seen so-and-so at my church, and they didn't come to my kid's picnic or whatever, you know. We hear it all on the air, right? And so Bill is that guy that comes literally to everything.
What do you think? 410-319-8888. Let's look at some of these other things, these races. I want to go through some of them where there's a real challenge going on. In Jim Kraft's open seat in District 1.
Yes.
The Sun endorsed Goldman. Is that right?
That's the Sun editorial board endorsed
not
Goldman.
Not you, but
yes.
Scott.
Correct.
Yeah, right,
correct,
right.
Yes.
There's a difference,
yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So Scott Goldman, retired Army officer, was endorsed. But that's also where... Zeke Cohen is running. Mark Edelson is running, and Mark Parker.
Yes,
right.
There's a lot of really good candidates in District
One. A lot of good candidates.
And I mean, I've heard it posited by others in town that if people had known the Board of Estimates change would have come earlier in the year, that some of these people might have run for city council president or controller. But yes, you have three candidates in one city council race that have raised in excess of $100,000. I think there's only four or five candidates citywide that have done that, and three of them are in the first district. So you really have a very high dollar, very highly contested race in the first, and also you have a contested Republican race, which is
absolutely
unique in the city of Baltimore.
Right. That's the one district people think that a Republican might be able to win in the general election.
Right. Yeah.
Maybe.
It's really contested between Matt McDaniel and Liz Copeland. Former Lieutenant Governor Michael Steele did a fundraiser for her.
And she is who?
Liz Copeland?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She is the other Republican.
No, but
running.
Who is she?
She used to be a Democrat, and she used to run all the time as Elizabeth Smith.
Okay.
That's one way to change parties.
She was on the...
Okay, right, there you go.
She was on the liquor board. Yeah.
She was on the liquor board.
She was on the liquor board. She was a Democrat until just recently.
I gotcha.
She married a Republican. He's on the Central Committee.
Yeah. Yeah, and they call themselves urban conservatives now, and they build themselves as not sort of far right wingers, but people who believe in sort of basic sort of mainstream business friendly conservative principles.
She's calling for audits. Yeah. Like we've heard a lot of the candidates say we need.
Right, like everybody is now.
She also an urban conservative, you know, is a thing. It's a thing I've been trying to convince people because, you know, I'm not a Republican like people try to make me. But we was like, that's what the country was founded on. It's supposed to be a two-party system, and it's not here in Baltimore on any level. It's been 1939 since the last time we elected anything that wasn't a Democrat.
Well, that's not true.
Insane.
McKelvin was elected a mayor in Baltimore. That was the 50s, early 60s.
63 to 67.
39 since someone from a Republican was even on the council.
That's right.
McKelvin was the last mayor. And mm-hmm. still that was my whole lifetime before I was born.
Yeah, it's like 50 years ago now. Yeah.
What's interesting is in the 1930s, the Republican Party ran an all-black slate. And it was destroyed by an all-white slate of Democrats. And that was the last time there was a Republican on the city council.
Right, when the Republican Party was the home of the black voter.
Right.
Right, correct.
Right after the Civil War.
The last moment, the last time of that.
They're going to come back. They're going to come back.
I don't think that's not happening.
Not soon.
So, but one thing that... I love you, you know, Kelly, but that's not happening. But the one thing about this, before we get into the race here... that strikes me about the city council race that really, David Troy, makes me feel positive about our future are the vast numbers of 20 and 30-somethings who are running for office and seem to all be very serious and civically and socially committed.
Yeah, I think Dan Rodericks did a piece a few weeks ago saying that he was just really impressed with kind of the what he called the bright, shiny candidates that you know were available in so many districts now. And I think that that's really the case. I mean, everybody's been saying for a long time that you know there's a lot of young energy moving into Baltimore and that eventually that would get reflected in the electorate and, of course, in the candidates as well. And I think you know one of the things that's happening is that as people are getting a little bit more engaged online, you know, they're connecting and finding people of like mind and able to build out more of the real world organizational stuff that's required to make campaigns go. So I think we've seen a lot of that this time, and I think it's fantastic. I'm actually really optimistic about this next iteration of the city council because there's just going to be so many good people that I think are, you know, they're in it for the right reasons. They're not in it to, like, you know, get contracts for their friends and stuff like that. They're actually open, accessible people that really want to make a difference for the city. So that's exciting.
And that struck me deeply when it was months back, and I started talking about it on the air then, when I moderated these city council forums on transportation for the future transportation in the city. And that's where I was just really struck by the depth of these young candidates and what they're thinking and what they're saying. And that was really – so I've been thinking about this a lot. And then no matter who wins or loses in those races, I think you've got this body of people coming up that can make a real difference in this city.
I agree. I remember everyone wasn't as excited about young candidates 5 years ago when I ran, right? But it was like, what do you know? You're only 30, right? Like that was a bad thing with the establishment considered. And I remember feeling like, I mean, I really felt like I won when Brandon Scott won. Just Brandon Scott and Nick Mosby getting elected, regardless of what their ages were, per se, it was just that we were on the cusp of this new era of leadership coming. And so 5 years ago, I remember feeling really proud, and I've been really proud of the work that Brandon's done.
Brandon's been out there for sure.
And I think that his leadership, juxtaposed with his youth, is one of the reasons that people are looking at Adia Thomas differently than they would have if she had run 5 years ago. And it's different, now you've seen what our generation looks like as leaders, and now it doesn't look so far-fetched as it did 5 years ago. years ago.
And you know, it's interesting. You're talking about the young politicians. There is a kind of a swing difference here because you saw, him and Antonio Hayes and Corey McCray walking with Donna Edwards all through city neighborhoods yesterday, and you could feel this kind of generational divide in some ways over who goes with who. So a lot of black establishment has gone with Van Hollen, but you see this young political black community going with.
It's the same.
It's really kind of interesting to watch.
It's the same between Hillary and Bernie, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And if three people win who are part of that same network, they could have a really strong group. Shannon Sneed, Jermaine Jones, and John Bullock are all sort of in the same sort of best Democratic club and network of young people. And if they all are on the city council together, that could be its own little group that could potentially come out from under the power of Jack Young, who seems to really control the council.
And that best club, of course, started by Delegate Corey McCray and others when they built this new political organization, really, in generations, I think.
Right.
In this city that they
built. I tell you what's disheartening about that, though, is that camp kind of split in 14. Part of them went with Mosby. And so I really felt like Antonio Glover could have supported Shannon and ran for something else at a different time, possibly another delegate seat with McCray later, but to not support the person who supported you in your central committee race. And it's odd to me. He has all of these endorsements from these black women, and they've endorsed him over Shannon, who's been out there. I mean, she lost and was back on doors the next day. That 13 is very baffling to me. I don't understand the dynamics of how that coalition fell apart. So like, we watch them fall apart all the time, but it was like, what happened in just 5 years that you fell apart that fast?
So before we go to the phones here, I want to talk about District 3 because you raised the name of Jermaine Jones, and let's talk about that. That's another kind of district that's in battle. I think the paper endorsed Ryan Dorsey. Some papers.
That's the editorial board. People say it that way all the time. I just have an issue with as a reporter because people always think I endorse people when I didn't.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And I forget who the Afro endorsed in that seat.
I don't know if they did or not. I don't remember them endorsing
council
races.
They didn't endorse for every seat. Yeah. I don't think they did endorse for council races.
Okay. So let's talk about that. So Jermaine Jones is a very impressive young man running, and Ryan Dorsey is as well. So what about that to replace
It seems really contested. I know that the discussion online has been very, very contentious between those two camps, and I think Ryan has definitely done a terrific job in terms of going out and knocking on doors and really building relationships and building up an organization. I think the fact that some of the unions and other types of institutional money are pushing behind Jermaine Jones, I mean, it definitely gives him an edge from a fundraising standpoint. And so I think, Ryan's felt like that he's kind of had the DAC stacked against him perhaps a little bit on that front. But it's a very contentious race, and the fact that, there are two good candidates, out there, I think it bodes well, but it's going to be really interesting to see how that actually plays out in practice.
And I'd like to throw a third name in the mix, George Van Hook, who was second to Bobby Curran 5 years ago, got several thousand votes as a longtime community association president. He doesn't have the same online buzz that these younger candidates have. I mean, Ryan Dorsey's been all over social media for 2 years now, and Jermaine has his, as you say, union and best Democratic Club support. But I wouldn't be surprised if we see a community association president who's been there for a long time do well in that district.
So it's another race to watch.
Yeah, I would agree with Luke on that. I mean, campaigns are not won on Facebook or Twitter. Campaigns are won in the field, and it's about the people that you reach. Signs don't vote. Polls are often flawed and wrong, as I tell you all the time. And George has been out there, and he's well-known in his community.
Also, I want to mention that the early voting here, where 3 to 4 times the 2012 numbers came out, which is pretty phenomenal given how bad voting has been in Baltimore, how low it's been.
Abysmal.
And how is that playing out today that you've seen or heard?
Well, I just checked in with the Board of Elections 5 minutes ago before we came in, and they didn't have any numbers yet. So,
oh, shocking. Really?
not a good sign.
Not a great sign.
And
not a great sign because if it was large, you would have had it?
Well, no, I'm just saying not a good sign in terms of organization. They should have a 9 a.m. report. They should have an 11 a.m. report.
They've never been known for that.
Right. And so what we are hearing anecdotally is a lot of confusion at the polls. We know a lot of polling centers open late. We know a lot of polling centers or several did not have the scanners working. We know people didn't have the pencils and the pens they needed to fill out their ballots. So there's a lot of confusion at the polls. There have been long lines. I don't think it's a lack of interest. I think we have not a great organizational effort here this morning.
Yeah, and I'm hearing a lot of people that have been trying to vote that just can't. And then, of course, the other thing people are really annoyed about is they don't have the little stickers. That's the main thing that people are recording
online.
There's
a lot of events going on. They're free.
Really?
Yeah, they don't have the stickers at a bunch of polling places. Of all things to mess up,
That's sad because there's a lot of events going on that you can only get admission to with the I voted sticker.
Wow. Well, I mean, I think that
people are telling them to make their own online. Print out a sticker, put it on themselves.
Well, it was interesting. I had a conversation with my Uber driver on the way in here, and she was unaffiliated like myself, and she went to go vote.
See?
And she didn't understand why they gave her a provisional ballot. And I said, well, legally, they can't turn you away. If I show up to vote, they can't tell me I can't vote if I have ID and I have my voter registration card. But she didn't know that we were a closed primary state. Mm. She didn't know that she's never voted in a primary before. But she's unaffiliated.
So she can't vote.
So she can't vote. But, and so that always leads back to, I say, we don't teach civics anymore. And we really kind of have to start again because she wasted her time. She was one of those people in one of those lines this morning, frustrated now to the point she's ranting while she's driving me here. For something that she didn't even have to be a part of today.
Andrew Melton was just holding up a coupon. Apparently, instead of a sticker, he got a coupon. So
interesting.
Baltimore. But our Board of Elections is always...
Yeah, there are always issues on election day, but I think these new paper ballots. Actually, Dave and I were talking in the waiting room. They are much more cumbersome to use than the touch screens. I mean, the touch screens, bang, 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 you're out.
There, you're done.
Yeah. The paper ballots, you're filling out things, you're scanning them in. And so I could see how this is a much trickier system to get right.
Yeah, and to the credit of the folks that are trying to implement this system, it is good that we have a paper trail, and that if there is any question, we can go back and look at the paper ballots. The older touchscreen machines were really insecure, and you could actually go in and just change the number of votes for something if you actually wanted to. So the notion that we do have a paper trail is good, but it does add this extra cumbersome element, it seems.
I just feel like we have to stop changing multiple parts of the process every election year. Okay, if you're
going
to change when the primary is in the year, and you're going
to
change when the municipal election is held and what year it's held in, and then for God's sakes, can we just keep the machines that we know?
Yeah, exactly.
You're going to change everything and then blame people when they can't figure out how to get it right. It's like once they try to get used to it takes a long time to get in a groove with this. You don't do elections every day. You do them every other year. Just stop going willy-nilly with all the changes on everything.
Mm-hmm. So, folks, do join us. Clarence, the first caller up at 410-319-8888. Want to hear your thoughts, tell us what's happening out there, if you voted, what you're seeing. We want to know what you're thinking about this election coming up. When we come back from this break, we're going to talk about District 4 and District 5, which is an open seat. Now Ricky Spector is gone. What happens in that district? Your thoughts and ideas. We want to hear what you're seeing out there. So stay with us. We'll be right back. Back. This is Mark Steiner on our way back to a conversation with Catalina Byrd, David Troy, and Luke Broadwater. Let me remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. It's not a credit union. It's not a bank. It's a credit union. It belongs to you. Money comes back in the end. More information at www.mecu.com or at steinershow.org. It's MeQ, Baltimore Credit Union's banner. Let's go right to the phones at 410-319-8888. And Clarence, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Steiner. I think, Ms. Byrd, you... good morning, first.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I think, Ms. Byrd, you heard me say that if you were over 40, you had nothing coming from me in this election. Well, when I walked into the voting poll this morning, I was horrified because everybody in there was in their 60s like myself. And it was like all of a sudden they became the enemy. But my primary, my adversary. What I saw this morning was there was a lot of confusion in the folks who I don't really think understood the equipment with it. They were having trouble plugging them in and getting the keys to get the machines to boot up. Now, I only question whether or not the paper ballots were very easy to fill out. I mean, the letters were big, the boxes were clear, easy to see, and all of that. But then if you scan it into the machine, and I was thinking to myself, do these things have battery backups in them? What if, and I mean, all sorts of those little things that you don't think would happen. I started saying, okay, is this one of those situations? But it was easy. I mean, I didn't see any thing wrong with it. Very easy. But still, I hope the young folks, after they get off from work, start coming out, you know, because from my point of view, even at 64, this is the time when they need to change and move in the direction that they wanted. They don't need the older folks that are currently running, that have been around a long time, still pushing them in the same direction. That let them choose their own direction to go, you know.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Steiner.
Thank you, Clarence.
Thank you.
Do we think there's going to be a young vote coming out?
I think so. And more so to Clarence's point, I remember early voting, they were saying they had some issues, not with the scanning, but apparently you need these special pins, and people weren't returning the pins at the early vote location, so then people couldn't vote. Then it turns out, well, maybe you can use a regular pin. And they, in a couple of places, ran out of the large print paper ballot, which is for seniors. So there's some other things that we should be monitoring throughout the day to make sure they don't run out of those pens, they don't run out of ballots, because they did that during early voting.
Well, in terms of the youth vote, and this is just one data point, but Bill Ferguson posted something that he said that in District 46, his Senate district, 40% of the vote was first-time primary voters.
Mm-hmm.
And a significant percentage were also 18 to 34, much higher than you would have guessed. So, you know, again, small sample size. We got to look at how this plays out across the whole city. But
it's not more than we would have guessed. It's what I've been saying on the station for months now. This is the first presidential cycle that millennials outnumber baby
more
boomers.
Than what the pollsters are saying. Let's put it that way.
And then in Bill Ferguson's district is where those hidden people, remember
sure.
we were talking
yeah.
about it, that aren't getting polled because they're not in van because
yep,
they didn't
exactly.
live here 5 years ago. That's where they live. Those Hopkins Fellows love Canton Crossing,
mm-hmm.
Upper Fells Point, and all these other new made-up neighborhoods. Those were the people I was talking about.
Canton's not, they're not made-up neighborhoods. They changed neighborhoods.
Yeah.
I think citywide, the number was, after early voting, was 26% were first-time voters. So that's a pretty good percentage to come out. 40% down in the 46th. Who that benefits, I'm not really sure. There's a lot of talk about, will that help somebody who appeals to young people do better? Does that help a DeRay McKesson? Does that help
Elizabeth Embry?
Yeah, Elizabeth
right.
Embry. I don't know. I hear from young people who like Sheila Dixon. So I hear from.
Yeah, it just depends a lot on kind of your, background and all that. So it's tough to tell. And I think, the other, kind of question here is how does the split actually work between today and early voting? We know that with early voting, we had, about 30,000 people, Luke, that
right.
turned out.
Right.
So, for us to get to levels that we saw in like 2011, we need to see something around 50,000 more people
mm-hmm.
turn out today. And that's going to be maybe a challenge if we have these polling place issues. So mm-hmm. it'll be really interesting to see if we break 80,000 today.
I don't think so, because comparing it to 2011, which was our lowest,
yeah.
previously our lowest turnout year, as opposed to comparing it to what 2012 looked like, because it's a presidential year.
Yeah, but 2012 was only 42,000.
But here's the thing.
Obama was uncontested.
Right.
Yeah.
I know.
But
in 2008, it was like 110.
Yeah, right, and those are the numbers that we should be looking at when we try to project today, because it's more accurate. Our municipal elections were always our lowest, but our primaries were always our highest turnout, and gubernatorial always sat in the middle. So that was the thinking, so they said, about moving the mayoral election to the presidential cycle.
My only question is that in 2008, Obama had this record turnout because everybody wanted to turn out to support Obama. I just don't know whether we're going to see that this year. But I've been
primaries.
Saying like 90 to 100, you know. That's kind of where I'm guessing.
So I think we've seen 100 and I think we've seen about a third of votes cast during early voting. And what's going to be great about that is hopefully right at 8 o'clock or 8:05, we will have a wonderful exit poll for how this thing is headed. You know, we're going to have a one-third of the electorate in.
You'll have some papers. Will
no,
have
no, everybody will. I mean, yeah. So
it'll get put out.
Be posted on the Board of Elections website, and that'll be better than any exit poll you could do, right? If one-third of votes are counted. So that's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
If they've done it.
Assuming those computers are functioning.
Hopefully the Board of Elections has their act together.
I have friends in the Board of Elections. We ain't going to just keep throwing them under the bus like this.
Well,
it's a very small staff.
They
don't get
hard.
To
we
choose the technology they have
in them.
To use.
I believe in them.
I got a small staff too. But, so and they, let's go to – but we'll stop. So let's go to District 5 for a moment. And folks, do join us, 410-319-8888. We really want to hear your thoughts on where you've been today. Have you voted? Do you vote early? Are you voting now? Who do you like and why? So we talked a bit earlier about Bill Henry in District 4.
Sure.
And I think that we'll see where that ends up. It'll be either the vice president of CSX or it'll be Bill Henry. But District 5 – the son, I know, endorsed Elizabeth
Martinez.
Correct.
But that's an interesting race going on here. You've got people like Christopher Irvin.
Mm-hmm.
Who should have gotten
your
endorsement.
Not my
but
endorsement.
Your editorial board's
it's
endorsement.
A really impressive.
He's a really good guy.
Really impressive.
Mm-hmm.
And
Betsy Gardner. Yitzi.
And Yitzi Schleifer,
yeah.
Right?
Right.
And a couple other people running.
Sharif Small, I think, is another one.
Oh, right.
Sharif Small and Derek Lennon.
Derek Lennon.
So, I mean, Yitzi has the most money, if that means anything, and he has been putting out mailers and doing a lot of door knocking. I think Chris Irvin has a good amount of support, too. And then Betsy Gardner has, Ricky Spector's endorsement, Jack Young's support, so she has some institutional support.
So she's the establishment candidate.
And then, Elizabeth Martinez obviously works in the law department as a lawyer and perhaps appeals to people who perhaps sit on the Sun's editorial board who like
yes, it would appear so.
Who like JDs behind names and things like that. So
I mean, I don't know her, so I can't say. You know, and
she's
I'm
impressed
with
me
Chris,
as smart as well. Yeah.
But when people ask me if I was a Democrat, who I would have voted for, I said Elizabeth Embry for that reason. Though I feel like, especially again with the sky falling and all these novices, that at least an attorney would make better policy because they understand the nuances of legalese to write it. And so maybe that's what they were thinking. I don't know her, but I did think it was odd when I read you guys.
I really hadn't heard of her until a couple of days prior to that
op-ed.
And it turned out that she had been at my daughter's school recruiting door knockers.
Oh, wow.
And a couple of my daughter's friends actually went out and knocked on doors for her. So, that she was able to convince some 10th grade girls. So that's something,
How old is she?
I think she's in her mid-30s.
35?
So she's young, too.
Sure. Yeah, she is.
Okay.
So let's go to the phones here. We've had a couple of those candidates on, and I've talked to a bunch of them, and I think that's an interesting race there. I'm especially enamored of the Martinez and Irvin in that race. I think they both bring something very fresh to the conversation that others have not.
Okay.
410-319-8888. William, you're on the air. Welcome.
Yes, welcome. Good day to you.
Good day to you.
Yes, has anyone ever explored the idea of people voting, say, at the post offices because they're kind of distributed throughout the neighborhoods and it's actually easy for people to get to logistically, parking, the whole nine yards? And also, I voted this morning. Last time I voted, you had the touch screen and, you had maybe six or seven machines.
Right.
And when I voted today, it was like those old-time desks that you would have in the kindergarten. You kind of scratch off what you have, and then you walk to this machine in the corner, and you put it in. And to me, it seems to slow the process down.
It's much slower.
I don't think it's any more accurate, because if you mistouch the paper with your pen, it comes up as an error, while the touchscreen is most everybody's, has cell phones. They're used to touchscreen. They could go back, they can correct,
Well, we just finished talking about that at some length about the new way of voting, and I think a lot of people find it has a lot of shortcomings.
It's definitely much, much slower, but I think the issue was, as Dave mentioned, was about security. And so there is this paper trail if someone hacks into the system and changes all the votes. So that's the
main
thing.
I'm not convinced that this implementation is the best we could have come up with, but there was at least a reason for doing it.
But I was going to mention the NDSS, which is the address system the Postal Service has. Your zip code has all your information, so for someone to hack in, they would have to know every single zip code and every single route number. So if part of your registration or when they ask your ID is, you know, you put in your zip code when you vote.
Right, right.
That way it's less easy. It's less chance of somebody hacking in because they're not going to know all the zip codes and all the extensions.
So let me ask our resident techie over here, David Troy, is that comment on that?
You know, I mean, I think it's going to boil down to, you know, making these changes is complicated, and we keep doing it. As Catalina said, it would be great to kind of settle on a system and stick with it for a while. So I'd be in favor of, you know, kind of settling down the technology for now. One day I'd love to see online voting happen, but there's a lot of technical problems with that as well. So, and there are, you know, solutions to that that other countries are using. But I think, you know, for now, I think our best bet is just to kind of take the system we have and make it work as best we can.
Plus, zip codes don't really apply because you can be in 21217 and be in 11 or 9.
Neighborhoods,
like, that doesn't,
yeah, exactly. Right. They don't really correlate
too
well.
It doesn't correlate to the actual precinct.
Now, he was saying with the 4-digit extensions, you might be able to do that, but I don't know that those lines fall along district lines.
No.
I would bet not.
I don't know that for a day that people, we are trying to convince people to come out and be a part of, that we send them to the post office, which is kind of like notorious, like the DMV with some of
schools are community institutions. People know the schools and neighborhoods and know how to get those.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking about where my closest post office is, and it's a lot further away than where my polling place is. So.
And a lot of them are quite small.
Yeah.
Yeah, you need a big facility, too. So
let's go back to the phones here, because I'm going to jump into District 8. Oh, no, 7. 410-319-8888. Phyllis, you're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Just make a comment about voting this morning. I actually, I guess if I could be candid, I have gone back and forth about which candidate I would support and vote for and things like that. And I found myself when I was in the booth this morning that I really didn't know who I wanted to vote for. So I went from being on what I call the right side of history and voting for Hillary to voting for Sanders. Because I've been very impressed with some of the stuff that he's been talking about. And then when it comes to the mayoral race, I really liked David Warnock, but at the same time, I kind of felt like the race was between Sheila and Pew, and so I didn't want to split that vote, so I found myself voting for Pew and not really going for Warnock, somebody I thought could bring some fresh ideas into the city of Baltimore, and I didn't think he had an opportunity to win, to be honest with you. Well, and just wanted to share that.
No, thank you, Phyllis. Those are really interesting observations, yeah. I think there are a lot of people who are wrestling with, do I want to vote for who I would really like to vote for in the mayoral race, or do I vote for Sheila or Catherine, depending on who I think would be better?
Yeah,
that's
the dilemma you described there is called strategic voting. You know, people are starting to get enough information where they kind of decide what they think the shape of the nature of the race is, and then they vote based on kind of like who they'd rather see of the people they think are in the lead. The one thing I would say at this point is that this race is so hotly contested and the numbers are tight enough that I don't know that we even really know, you know, what the nature of the race is, because if the youth turnout is high, it's going to skew one way. We don't even know what way. I think it's kind of up in the air. So I personally have been encouraging people, just vote your conscience and we'll hope for the best.
Because
the polls are really kind of unreliable at this point.
Yeah, I think that, frankly, I've been, not just in this race, but nationally as well, everyone seems to be voting strategically, as you say. They vote based on who other people are choosing in polls, on these calculations of where people can win in the West or the East and all these things, instead of just looking at the candidates and voting for the most quality candidate, which is frankly how I vote personally, as I try to vote for the most quality candidate. So, but it seems like everyone's trying to be this sort of strategist with their vote. And that's what we heard on the call as well.
No, we've heard that. And Phyllis represents a lot of voters and the people I've talked to just around. I mean,
yeah,
whether here at the station or just where we hang out, talking to people, a lot of people are saying, I got to vote either for Dixon or Pew because, because for whatever reason they like or don't like the other person.
Right.
go back to the phones unless you have something you really have to, you're dying to get in? That,
oh, no. Okay. Let's talk to the people.
410-319-8888. We'll go back to the phones here. Let's talk about the open seat that Nick Mosby left in District 7.
Sure.
Leon Pinkett III is who the Sun Papers endorsed. And I was just checking, the Afro only didn't endorse for mayor. They endorsed for Congress.
Afro did endorse for mayor. They endorsed Sheila Dixon.
They did, yeah. Right. Yeah,
they
right.
did not endorse for council.
That's what I'm saying.
Sorry.
Well, and this is also a race that has Marshall Bell in it.
Yep.
Sean Tarrant.
Ahmed Royalty.
Huh?
Ahmed Royalty.
Wesley West.
Wesley West.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, it's a crowded race. It's actually, there are more people running in the 7th than in any other council seat. There's 13 candidates.
Yes.
That's like the number running for mayor. So Leon Pinkett has the most money. He's an assistant deputy mayor. He's been a top person with the BDC. So he has a lot of institutional support.
Sun really does like to endorse establishment people, don't they?
As much as that joke is funny, Leon's like the least establishment of all of the establishment
people. I'm just saying.
He's like a really nice guy. But I think, you know, because it's a lower level ballot race, it kind of works out in Bell's favor, the name recognition and the fact that he's going to alphabetically come first that far down in the ballot. Once people vote for the big stuff, usually, they get down there and they start picking one and picking three. They're not looking for anybody anymore. And so Bell comes before Pinkett. They'd have to really be going in strategically, as you all say, looking for Pinkett or looking for Tarrant. And that's my fear in 9 with Bullock and Welch, because Bratcher, and I'm not sure, did they?
Jarrell Bratcher.
Right. Yeah. So he comes before John alphabetically on the ballot. And will people be really reading or just looking for the B?
That's an interesting point.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah,
that's a really interesting point.
I'm interesting.
Who said you weren't? Marshall Bell has certainly made a big issue of his family.
Yeah,
and
he keeps talking. Every time he brings up his name, he brings up his brother.
His brother and the dad, too. The dad's a very well-known dentist.
Oh, dentist, yeah.
And then, obviously, Sean Tarrant has held office 2-term state delegate. He lost his seat. So there, and Wesley
and
West
moved to the 7th to run in the 7th as well.
That's true. And Wesley West also became pretty well known during the protests.
Because he was arrested by the police in his church.
There are some high profile candidates in that race for sure.
Any bets on that race? No, we don't have any polling anyway. But
I think I can narrow it down to 3 people for you.
I would narrow it down to 3 people too. I think.
Yeah, right, but that's about Alpha.
Right.
As far as I would
Pinkett,
go,
Pinkett, Bell,
Tarrant,
and
Bell.
Yeah.
Right.
I would agree.
So that's interesting. Now this race here. Let's talk about some of these contested races here. I know we've talked around the Pete Welch, John Bullock thing, but this is a really. I mean, John Bullock, you know, full disclosure, until he declared, was a guest on the show frequently.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as a political commentator, and a really bright guy. I like him a lot.
Yeah,
very committed. But so that's an interesting race. I mean, this is.
Yeah.
So Bullock, he could lose this.
Bullock ran in 2011 and he got 4th. Many people don't remember that. He wasn't a widespread choice at the time. But those other candidates who got 2nd and 3rd are not running, and many people have not been impressed with Pete Welch's performance as a councilman. And so they are looking for an alternative. Bullock is smart, and so a lot of money is going to him. That said, I think that Welch knows what he's doing. His mom was on the council for a long time, and I often say this, not a week goes by where Pete Welch isn't giving out somebody a certificate or a citation, has a youth baseball team at the city council on the floor to be honored. I suspect there's a lot of fridges in West Baltimore with a Pete Welch certificate on the on there. So I think that he is
good point.
I wouldn't count him out just yet.
Yeah, he's definitely, politically skilled, and a lot of people seem to really have an allegiance to him. I do think that, for younger folks, people kind of feel like that, he represents kind of the old school Baltimore establishment, kind of rubber stamp city council mindset. And I think that a lot of people would love to see somebody like John come in and kind of, bring some fresh energy and blood. But, it's hard to tell. This may or may not happen this time.
That's an interesting race to watch.
I'm born and raised in the 9th, and I actually agree with you, Luke. But it's really not political to me. I mean, Pete does that stuff, as did his mom, in non-election years. Like, he's a big advocate for kids and just believes. And he grew up in an era in Baltimore where all of our politicians, regardless of race or party, like, they really focused on the youth. They come out, like, if you listen to Carl, it was a time when Baltimore, like, cared about his kids and didn't just use them as political platforms and talk about loving kids, like, and really did it. So, and John is a friend, and I respect him, and we've been on the show together. And I can't vote for either one of them today, so all I can do is say I just don't think it's fair just because he's been in office as long as he has or his mom has to just say that what he does in the community is all is political strategy.
Sure. No,
yeah. Oh, no, so, I wouldn't suggest it is.
I think it's genuine. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm going to get to the phone channel.
And genuine works more than fake.
Yep.
Much more, yeah.
And I want to cover what's happening in District 12. I think that's a really interesting race to watch and where we think that's going. David tweeted in, yes, short line, hard decision for mayor, paper ballot worked for me, but others had to redo theirs and no stickers. Ian tweeted in, why not have a touchscreen that prints results? You double-check the printout itself, then hand it in for filing. And Michael Wilson tweeted in, voted absentee, piece of cake.
I like the touchscreen print model.
Yeah, that could work.
I mean, that's why I didn't understand from the beginning why they didn't go for that.
Yeah,
that was an easy model to do, satisfies all the questions.
Was it an option? I mean,
maybe not for the people who are designing, because it's your friends, the Board of Elections.
No.
I'm messing with you. Okay.
But you know, I mean, we always talk about the technology that we'd like to see used, but the question is, does it exist?
It exists.
In the collective bargaining, the way that we choose these things to be used statewide, was there a bid put in for it? Like, you know, let's not all go down with burning torches in front of Armstead's office, because we know he didn't.
I can see that, you know, you could make an argument that the reason why you wouldn't do that is because you could potentially flip votes between the actual ballot casting and the printout. And, of course, you ask the person to check it. On the other hand, you know, maybe people miss something. So the idea of having the actual mark go onto the page by the person's hand, you could argue, is a little bit, you know, safer and more authentic. But I would imagine that's where that argument would be made. Mm.
So Renata, we're going to come to your call. Hold on 1 second. I do want to ask about District 12 right now, Stokes' old district, and where we think that's going.
Who did the Sun endorse in that?
Gary Crum.
That was one of the endorsements I agreed with.
Well, I'll pass that on to the person who did that. so there's a race. I think Robert Stokes, who works for Carl Stokes, has the most money in the race. He has the institutional endorsements, Jack Young, Jim Kraft. He's gotten a nasty letter from the sitting judges telling him not to put out his mailers because he was putting some of the judges on but not others. Kelly Cross is a well-known challenger. He's got a UVA law degree. He went to Princeton undergrad. But he says, the victim of this smear campaign based on a 2009 voyeurism conviction. There are several other candidates, Gary Crum, who the Sun endorsed, Jason Pyron, and others. But so I actually think that's a very, very wide open race.
Eartha Harris, who runs in 12.
Yes, Eartha's in that as well. I don't know who's going to win that race at all.
It's really hard to say. I mean, I think that Stokes and Crum may be at the top of the heap, maybe.
Yeah. I think it's between Crum and Cross.
Yeah, Cross too, right.
Yeah.
Because they speak to two different parts of the group that's still left in what is the 12th district. Between 2011 and now, there's been a lot of change. Our favorite G word, gentrification, in the 12th district. And so Crum represents young, but he's also part of the old native part of what is 12. Kelly represents the kind of people, you know, the Princeton and things. You're talking about the echelon and class system of people moving into the areas where others have been displaced, and he has these huge signs. And, you know, he's claiming not just the voyeurism, but the fact that he's openly gay is why people are attacking him. And so it's about where that resonates and who outnumbers who. Do the natives outnumber the new folks?
And that is a district that's split between east and west, too. And the east part of the district is much poorer, and the west part is upper income. And so you see that divide, and, you know, Kelly's from the west side and Crum is from the east.
That interesting part of the analysis. I'm very curious to see who wins this one. 410-319-8888. Renata, you're on the air. Welcome.
Welcome. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
I just want to say that I voted for Sheila Dixon. Only reason being because I have spoken to a lot of people, and they said, oh, she make a mistake and things. Well, you know, every candidate that have run, you know, over 80% have make a mistake. We just haven't heard about it. But I think that she's been there when she was mayor. A lot of recreation centers open. She cares about the people. And I think, you know, although I like Catherine Steele, but I believe that it will take her, you know, another 2 to 3 years to get the system, to learn the system, you know.
Okay.
So I voted for Sheila Dixon. I think, she'll be a good mayor. Okay.
Thank you so much. No, I think that the people who support Sheila, I think that's very common sentiment, mm-hmm. that's part of the pull for Sheila Dixon in this community.
Yeah,
I think
the good outweighs the bad is what they say.
Speaking of the Board of Elections, let me just read this real fast. The State Board, somebody, Toby Myers on our Facebook page said, is it me or did the Maryland State Board of Elections backslide 4 or 5 decades in efficiency in changing this antiquated system of paper ballots that they turn to get scanned? At the polling place that I go here in Allegheny County, the one and only scanner was down for 15 minutes while the election judges tried to figure out how to lock the scanner into place. This is in addition to a number of elderly persons that had to return to the voting booths to completely fill in the circles on the ballot. Fortunately, the polling center was not terribly busy. That was just a little note from the western part of our state that listens to our program and what they were saying about that.
I think a lot of people feel that way.
Yeah. So we have like 2 minutes left here.
It's so hard to appease everybody. I mean, I think about we've been talking about the way we vote since George W. Bush, you know, hanging chads and all those things. And I also feel like we need to do more training with our election judges.
Absolutely. And let me read these two quick thoughts in here before we have to roll. Mike McGuire writes in, I've been happier about the paper ballot if the scanner reported the results and allowed for confirmation. Another person just wrote in, my fiance and I are an interracial couple, black and Asian, and who reside together. Well, despite both of us residing in that address for a few years, being registered Democrat and everything linking both of our names to our address, both Warnock and Embry only sent mailings to this is really long. I'm sorry. I'd love to read this whole thing, but it's really long. It's very off-putting because it almost seemed like race politics, with the white candidates only reaching out to the Asian residents and the black activists only reaching out to the black resident. As soon as I saw that, I stopped considering either a legitimate candidate.
Huh.
That's interesting.
Hmm. Yeah, it's fairly hard to do that kind of targeting to some extent. It might be based on some other factor, but that might be how it played out in practice.
A lot of those choices are made by your voter history. Yeah. And Maybe they got down into race, but usually you do it on voter history is how they target people.
And we did talk about 13 earlier. I'm going to thank the three of you so much. It's been great.
Yeah.
And we look forward to our conversation tomorrow when we see who wins what, if we do see who wins what
hopefully.
By then.
You can come watch with David and I. I'm a moderator in the Baltimore elections. We're having a watch party tonight.
Where?
Yeah. Liam Flynn's Ale House on North Avenue.
We want
you to join the Baltimore Election 2016 Facebook group if you're going to come.
Yes.
I'm already a member.
Well, there you go. We'll definitely mark your
name. So come hang with us tonight.
Catalina Byrd. That would be a fun place to do it. Catalina Byrd, media consultant, political strategist, voice here on WEA. David Troy, who co-founded the Baltimore Election 2016 Facebook group and co-founder of 410 Labs. Luke Broadwater, reporter of the Baltimore Sun, where he covers City Hall and local politics. Thank the three of you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
And thank you all for being part of the show today. Really appreciate it. Sorry we couldn't get into these last-minute calls, but we just couldn't get there. I apologize. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our senior producers are Stephanie Mavronis and Mark Gunnery. Our engineers are Andrea Milton. Our interns are Sienna Greaves, Morgan Barber, Manifa Wilson, and Calvin Perry. Theme music by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. Send me your thoughts about today's program to talk@steinershow.org. The podcast, The Mark Steiner Show. Share it with your friends. Visit us on the web at steinershow.org or listen to us via your favorite podcasting app. And for your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Get out there and vote. Take care.